Welcome to the New York Times podcast, your ongoing litigation of music news. I'm your host, Karen Gans.
We were lovers in a past life. I can see it in your green eyes. Maybe you were one of my wives in a long lost tribe. There's just something about you I know. Started centuries ago, though. You see, your kiss is like a lost ghost. Only I would know.
You were just hearing Past Lives by Kesha, which is a newer, somber Kesha song. I'm here today with Joe Coscarelli and Taffy Brodesser-Ackner to talk about Kesha. Joe is a cultural reporter at the New York Times, and he just wrote a story kind of updating us on the legal case, Kesha versus Dr. Luke. And Taffy is a contributing writer for the New York Times Magazine, who just wrote a story about Kesha, kind of updating us on what her life is like now. For those of you who don't know that Kesha and Dr. Luke are involved in a very high-profile legal battle, Joe, why don't you summarize that for us? Bring us up to date.
Very complicated, as anyone who's read even one of these stories might be able to tell you. There have been many dueling lawsuits in many different states over the past few years. But things really got going, I guess, in October 2014, so 2 years ago, when Kesha, who had spent, you know, the better part of a decade as a sort of protege, artist, co-writer, frequent collaborator, seemingly friend, it appeared to the public, with Dr. Luke, who is a native New Yorker, one of the most successful pop songwriters of this era, producer, songwriter, known for Kelly Clarkson, Since You've Been Gone, some Britney Spears hits, some Miley Cyrus hits, you know, basically anything you've heard on the radio in the last 10 years, Dr. Luke may have had a hand in it. Kesha was his discovery. They met when she was, I think, 17, 18, fresh out of high school. And he shepherded her career through number one songs, a couple of big albums, and then silence starting in 2013. Behind the scenes, I guess there had been some contract renegotiations, some more ugliness, basically, when Kesha came out and said that throughout their entire partnership, Luke had been abusing her physically, emotionally. She sued him. She sued his label, Kemosabe.
And she had sued to get out of her contract.
Right. So she has many contracts signed with Dr. Luke. Taffy, I think you can speak to that as well.
Yeah, she has a lot of contracts.
She's signed to him as an artist and as a songwriter. So they basically anything that Kesha does musically is tied from the very beginning to Dr. Luke, who has a lot of say over what kind of music she can put out.
Yes, he has to have all approval.
And when and how and who writes it. He's supposed to have six songs on any album she's supposed to put out, have to be produced by him. So she wants out of that because she says that, you know, this whole time he's been intimidating her, abusing her sexually, including at least an incident of rape in 2005, back before anyone knew who she was, but after she had signed these extensive contracts with Dr. Luke.
So, Joe, just to bring us up to date, just on the status of the case, a lot of Kesha's claims were dismissed by a court in New York, and now the tables have sort of turned, and now she's gone from being the plaintiff to the defendant, you write in your piece, because Dr. Luke is suing her for defamation.
Right. So at the same time that Kesha put these original claims in the lawsuit, and they were, you know, some shocking, really, really horrible stuff, Luke countersued in New York and said that Kesha was defaming him and that she had breached her contracts and was basically arguing that all of this was a ploy to get out of these unfavorable contracts and to, you know, free herself from his musical factory as opposed to him as this horrible
Svengali
figure. Yes.
It's also important to point out that as the case became public, Kesha became sort of like a cause. A lot of feminists took up, you know, Free Kesha. Mm-hmm. She had a lot of support from big name artists. Taylor Swift gave her some money, ostensibly to help defray her legal costs. Adele got involved. So Kesha became a cause, and she became a subject.
Right.
Many
Free
people,
Kesha was the
feminist
hashtag.
Cause
and it's still going.
And
right.
A symbol of everything wrong in the music industry and everything wrong in contracts where men have power. It became something much bigger than a simple filing.
But that was all complicated when these things got to court. And earlier this year, you know, a judge in New York is looking at it and saying, you know, these seem like pretty standard recording industry contracts. A lot of these claims that Kesha is making, you know, either happened somewhere else or are past the statute of limitations or there isn't enough proof in these lawsuits. And Kesha started to lose ground legally.
Right. And there was no criminal complaint.
There was never a criminal complaint.
She never filed a criminal complaint. She filed a civil complaint for damages and asked to be relieved of her contract.
So basically at every turn, Kesha is being told, no, these contracts are valid. And this is hard. And throughout, you know, she hasn't been releasing music. She hasn't been playing live very much until recently. Right. You know, this became basically a stalemate where Dr. Luke and Kesha were locked in these contracts that say any music she put out has to be approved by Dr. Luke, and yet he is painted in public and in her court filings as this insane monster, commenting on her weight, saying that he's going to ruin her mother's life. Her mother is a songwriter as well.
Right.
A lot of ugly stuff, and this puts them both in a pretty difficult situation, which I think, Taffy, maybe you can speak to, having spent some time with Kesha lately.
Right. It's where both of our stories lay, in this stalemate. What are they supposed to do? Is she supposed to try to recant so she could move on with her music? No, she does not recant. Is he supposed to just say, you know, this is a headache, let's let it go away? No, because then he looks guilty, and neither of them can walk away from that. Kesha seems very sad, and she still seems like the Kesha we met. She talks a lot about yoga and about astrology and about trying to find some peace and trying to find, it's a strange thing. It's if you've ever seen someone going through a very extended trauma, they try very hard to convince themselves that they're okay when really they're still very much going through it. And how are you supposed to be okay with that? So when I met her, I was obviously in a room with a lot of different people. I said in my story, I had heard stories of Kesha being interviewed, and they were wild, and they were amazing. And mine was not that. Mine was
a little bit more like a doctor's visit.
Like, I've had some doctor's visits where I was alone in the room with a doctor.
Right.
This was a lot of people making sure that that the conversation didn't veer toward ruining her litigation or antagonizing anyone. They didn't want that.
And this is because while a lot of Kesha's claims, most of them have been thrown out or withdrawn, Dr. Luke's defamation case continues. So.
Right. The reason they were withdrawn in California is because the California judge said he was just going to mirror the New York decision.
Right.
So it just was redundant. And the reason the case moved from California to New York was because the contract's jurisdiction is in New York, which works out to the label because New York can keep you on a contract. And in California, there's a 7-year rule.
After Kesha signed her contracts with Dr. Luke, she was then signed to Sony Music.
Right, exactly.
Via Dr. Luke. So
right. And Sony is in New York.
Right. So Sony is based in New York. That's ultimately where her contracts lie at the moment, although they're still within Dr. Luke's control.
Right.
Complicated music
Everything's
industry.
Very complicated. I mean, there are lawsuits in California, in Nashville. Like, this is around the world.
So did you get the sense from Kesha that her eyes now are focused on the litigation, or are they focused on trying to revive her music career?
I feel like it's both. That she understands that this litigation has to play out. She wants to see it play out. She wants to be vindicated against his accusations of defamation. But more than anything, she really is just somebody who wants to play music and to perform and to write new music. It's interesting. Like, all of this has given her like a new dimension in her soul, and she has a lot that she wants to say. And it stands to reason like that she would want to, that she's an artist and she's a songwriter and she wants to write songs about it. She wants to sing about it. Not necessarily about it, but about this sort of new side of herself. She's grown older. I mean, we all know what happens from the time you're 25 to the time you're 29. There's a new you. The last picture we have of her is warrior.
Right. So tell us a little bit about what Kesha's original presentation was to the world.
Kesha loved a good time. And she admits that. And I mean, I say admit that as if there's anything wrong with it. There's a temptation to say, oh, she was never like that. She's very much on board with the fact that she loved to party. She loved to drink. She loved to dance. She loved boys. She loved everyone. And she had a great time. She wanted very much to also put out a ballad. She wanted to put out something mid-tempo, but she felt that she was being pressured for her first album to only be kind of a party album. And in her second album, she has a kind of edgier rock sound. Like, she does a song with Iggy Pop. She does do some slow songs that didn't get released as singles. Past Lives, the one you played before, is actually one of my favorites of those songs. She wants to keep changing as an artist. The problem is that in her contract, this is just my observation, so I want to be clear. In her contract, it says that she has to proceed with making music the way she was making music when she signed. It even says that she can't change her name, right? And she did change her name. She removed the dollar sign from her name. She's being held to who she was when she was 18 and when she signed this contract. I think a lot of musicians must go through that. This is a particularly caustic case of it, where not only can you not change, but you also can't release new music because of this totally bonkers situation. That has anyone ever been in a situation like this?
There's a pretty wide berth in what can constitute keeping a right. similar sound. This obviously is being looked at under a different kind of microscope.
But also, can we talk about the very sexy topic of contracts? Her contract says she can't change. And yet she did change from someone doing kind of party songs to someone doing something edgier. And I think that was she wanted that. Who's to say that she wouldn't have been able to do more had this not happened? However, what's most important to know about contracts is that a contract can either kind of be the sort of boundary in which your relationship is held, or it can be used to control you. I look at my contracts and they could either hold me or they could make me do great work. A contract can be used in all these different ways. And that's what I think I learned, you know, the one to grow on from the story for me was you could use all of these systems in place either to have this great relationship or to hold someone prisoner. That's what
and
a contract
so
is.
What we've seen in the last few months, I think, is Kesha and her team sort of acknowledging in some way that the court isn't going to free her from
right.
these contracts. Barring some appeals
right.
or some crazy turnarounds, she's going to have to, if she wants to continue her music career,
right.
she's going to have to continue within these walls of these very strong contracts that she signed with Luke,
right.
you know, a decade ago. So now we've
right.
seen her turn to say, I would just like to put out music some way.
With someone who isn't Dr. Luke and with someone who doesn't report directly to him, which is a hairy topic, right?
Right. So where do we stand then with Kesha's music?
So she has these 22 songs that she delivered to Sony.
And you've heard?
I've heard four of them. There are 22 songs, and there is a lot of back and forth as to whether or not she was allowed to record songs without their auspices, right? But then again, was she supposed to go in? I don't know. I'm saying this based only on what I've read in her contract, that again, if this were another situation, they might be really psyched to hear that she made 22 new songs on her own. But their statement after my story seemed to indicate that they were not so pleased with that.
So these are demos. These are ideas for a new album, right? These are things she's been writing.
Yeah,
thinking.
And they are not what you've heard from her. They are, a lot of them are slower and more somber, and some of them are exactly what you would expect. There's one, she had told me the lyric, it's like a country song, I don't know if I'll let you into my saloon door, definitely about using metaphor.
Yeah. Well, her mom was a country songwriter, right?
Yeah,
and she's been moving a little bit more in this direction creatively. Like, we saw her on tour recently, which is a much more stripped down affair. Like, she used to sort of be known for glitter bombs and aliens, and she was kind of like, I mean, that was another part of her persona, was that before Miley and a bunch of other pop stars started gathering up the so-called freaks and outcasts.
Yeah,
like, she was
weirdo.
Doing that first.
Yeah.
Proud weirdo.
She was fine with
yeah.
being weird. That was the great thing about her initially,
yeah.
is that, like, she was not Britney. She was not worried about looking strange or sounding weird. She would distort herself with glitter.
She wasn't dancing choreography. It was all very loose, and it was about just sort of having a good time in yourself.
And she would also push the boundaries that women hadn't successfully pushed as mega pop stars, like talking openly about sex, talking openly about drinking, about things that men talk about all the time and are celebrated for.
Why don't we hear a little bit of Kesha's song Crazy Kids, which kind of captures that sort of offbeat, oddball, fun time persona.
Hello, wherever you are, are you dancing on the dance floor, drinking by the bar? Tonight we do it big and shining like stars, and we don't give a what, cause that's just who we are. And we are, we are, we are, we are.
So to go back to these new songs, so we haven't heard original Kesha music in a few years now, and there's some dispute from both sides about whose fault that is.
Yeah.
That we have Dr. Luke's side saying Kesha could have recorded and put out new music this whole time. She chose to take us to court to try to get out of her contracts.
Right.
Then you have Kesha saying, you know, she didn't want to be controlled musically by a man who she says abused her. So they've been in this stalemate where no new music has even been discussed.
And also, this is an art and not a science, right? The music is not something that can be churned out. It feels like there has to be some sort of good relationship for it to happen.
So now we have them stuck where Kesha saying she wants to put out new music. She's aware that it's possible this music will have to be put out by Kemosabe, which is Luke's label under Sony. No matter what, if Kesha's new music came out anytime in the next, say, 6 months, it would probably have Dr. Luke's stamp on it. And
right.
some of that money would be going to Dr. Luke.
I think they're fine with the money going to Dr. Luke. They were very clear with me about that, that Dr. Luke can have everything that's coming to him. She just doesn't want to be in a room with him.
So the point of dispute then is not only does she not want to be in a room or a recording studio with him, but they would like his approval to not be necessary to put out this music.
Yeah.
And that's where things, again, get hairy.
It is really hard to define this relationship. They have a group of producers that after a lot of back and forth, they've agreed upon about a dozen of them. And it's unclear what Dr. Luke's role should be. They're still in this contract. He could still, you know, there are still those six songs that when she signed it, it was like, you have to be on at least six songs of mine, okay? And now it's like, you have to be on six songs
right.
of mine.
And his team is saying he'll forgo those six songs that are listed in the contract, but he'll take the money, basically.
The
monetary damages will be a part of this.
Right.
So we have all these people playing intermediaries. You have executives from Sony, executives from RCA, the Sony label that Kesha is signed to via Dr. Luke.
Right.
Then you have people at Kemosabe, Dr. Luke's company, and his songwriting company, his publishing company as well, all sort of playing go-between, with the idea being that hopefully they won't have to sit at the same table.
Right.
At the same time, he's still the boss of his label.
Right.
And his argument would be, I'm not going to put out music that I don't sign off on if it's going to have my name on it, essentially.
Right. And as her first lawyer argued, this is in the court transcript, like Luke is the one who's important to Sony. Kesha makes them a lot of money, but Luke makes them a lot of money. And he has power here, I guess.
And then the question becomes, these songs, presumably, as you've alluded to, are going to be about her situation.
Or are they like about breaking free? Like, who knows what we're breaking free from when we're 29 years old? Most of it is about having a bad day.
Sure.
Most of it is still very much playing to her audience. She's also a really good songwriter. She would never think that anybody would want to sing along to her song about her situation. The best songs are not about specific situations, but there are songs where you can find your own situation in there. And this is a very unique situation she's
in. But now she has this sort of new persona where she's a symbol for freedom and she's speaking out about the abuse of women and sexual assault, and that she knows that anything she puts out is then going to be seen through this new lens.
Yeah.
Luke knows this as well. The problem is imagining them coming together to collaborate, even from afar, in putting out music that alludes, broadly
to, yeah.
to this sort of ugliness.
Yeah.
Right. And as she moves ahead
and we see her performing her old songs, you know, reconciling the sort of like jubilance and the party attitude of the old songs with her current situation is a little bit more difficult. So as we saw live, she's sort of reinterpreting them into more dirgy rock songs.
Right.
And trying to, you know, get different kinds of meaning out of it. But how does she move forward like that?
I don't know.
It's
I don't know.
Jarring to see. I mean, we all saw her recently in Brooklyn.
That show, right? Yeah.
She was performing. She's been on tour. The tour is called F the World. Again, broadly applicable.
Yes.
And she has a rock band instead of the sort of synth pop dancey stuff that she was originally known for with Luke. Kesha is playing these songs that she wrote with Luke, but now rearranged as rock songs and
or country songs
or, country
or
songs.
Haunted dirges.
Right. Like, so what did you see there from her that could tell us maybe where she's going?
What I saw was someone who's kind of in a cage. Like she was just prowling the stage in a way that if you'd seen her other concerts on those big stages in these big arenas, it felt to me like she was having a lot of fun. And it also felt to me like she was constrained. She can't sing her new songs. She sang some very pointed covers, I Shall Be Released and Please Release and You Don't Own Me.
Her new songs, another point of contention. Luke's team would say she's free to perform her new songs. She says, I can't share them with you. Again.
Right.
That's a big question mark.
I mean, I think that everyone's very afraid here. I mean, this is a guy that can sue you. And I just want to be clear that, like, he has a lot of money and he can do whatever he wants. So I think that it's a scary thing for her to make a move without permission. And they're not really so on speaking terms about those things, right? There was the Billboard Music Awards where she wanted to sing Rainbow. And they said no. And they said, no, you can't even sing. And then there was her sad Instagram post. And then there was... Then she had to sign a piece of paper saying she wouldn't mention any of her litigation or use it as a platform. And they decided to do a cover. And I think, I mean, you could just keep adding things to a defamation lawsuit. You could file new suits. And I think that they don't want that. This costs a lot of money. And that should not be something that isn't sort of hanging over this entire discussion.
This is obviously consuming her in every possible way. I mean, is there a scenario after having met her and spent time with her where she goes on stage at a show like we saw at Warsaw and doesn't talk about the litigation the whole time? Because the vibe I got was, you know, any time she had a chance to speak in between songs, it was basically an allusion to the case or about how bummed out she was. And it was sort of goading the crowd into a Free Kesha political rally. And I mean, I don't mean this as a criticism, but I feel like there's an alternate universe where she comes out on stage and says, hey, guys, I really miss you. I'm going to play some of my songs now. Doesn't bring it up.
I, for one, thought it was interesting. She spoke more candidly about that stuff on stage than she did when we were in interviews together, which, you know, what do I do with that? But I think that she has this very close relationship with her fans. These fans are her animals. They are so about her, and she's so in constant touch with them. And a lot of what she's doing now is communicating with them through Instagram and through Twitter. I think she feels that it is not so much, we might have been shocked by that, but I think it's an ongoing conversation between them. When she's performing, she's not performing for the three of us or the critic who is there. She's performing for the
animals.
For the animals with their like glitter and their tiger stripes.
It seems like she feels like it's only in her best interest to continue to stoke their anger about the situation.
I guess I don't understand it.
And obviously, you spent time with her under very limited conditions.
Yeah.
But do you have a sense of how she spends her days?
I think her litigation takes up a lot of her days. And I think she writes songs. And I think she meditates. And she tries to spend time with people that she loves. And this is conjecture, but I think that circle has gotten smaller over the years. That she doesn't live in the Hollywood Hills. She lives in Venice. She walks outside. And she loves to communicate with her fans. But I think that this has changed her in a way where she is not as forthcoming. She is not having wild interviews anymore. And I think her days are spent thinking about this. Whatever else she is doing in her day, she can't move forward. Her legs are bound until she feels like she can make music again and release it, until she knows when that's going to happen.
And the problem with the music, you know, then now, so now both sides say, you know, maybe there are some roadblocks up mm-hmm. and it's going to be a bumpy road, but they're working on an album in some
right.
way. There's a plan, whether or not it will be followed. There is a plan for new Kesha music
right.
to come eventually when everyone agrees it's ready.
Right.
Can everyone agree that it's ready while this litigation is ongoing? So right now we're looking at defamation suit going to trial, you know, as early as spring of 2017.
Right. Are we also going to be hearing an album then? That's crazy to think about. I don't know if I even like want to hear that music, right? Like that music is tainted with a lot of ugliness.
Right. So this casts a pall over, I think, both of their careers, you know, both of their current status
right.
are only defined by this case. And basically anything they do is going to be darkened
right.
in some way by the specter, the looming monstrous
right.
stacks of court papers and ugly claims going back and forth. And how can we expect them to reconcile that?
This is like when you sit down to listen to pop music, this is not what you want to be thinking about.
But it's also exposing lots of things about the music yeah. industry that people sometimes don't think about anymore.
Right.
You know, it seems very free. Oh, anyone can be a star. You put your song on the internet.
Yeah.
Oh, there's Vine stars. There's Musical.ly stars. There's so many ways to become famous. But becoming famous is still really tied up in these kinds of very restrictive contracts where you really do bind yourself to somebody who might not prove to be your ally going forward.
I think it's forever. I think that the claims are so red hot deadly. And what's gone on has gone on for such a long period of time. It will not be a blip in their lives. I think that in many, many years, when we read their obituaries, it will be in the first paragraph for both of them. When you think of it like that, how could you think they could move forward now? They've already lost so much. How could they move forward now? I don't know.
So what would have to happen for anybody to just say, we're ending this, for either side to just relent and say, you know what, it might look like we're, you know, revealing something that we don't want to look like we're revealing, but we can't continue. Emotionally, it's a toxic thing to continue with.
You know, right. It just doesn't seem possible at this moment. I think short of, you know, Luke saying you're free to go record
right.
the music that you want, which to him may seem like a tacit admission of some sort of guilt.
Yeah.
The other side, you know, Kesha could withdraw all of her claims and say, I made a mistake, recant in some way, and then maybe he would let her go.
She's
just
not
going
to do that.
Happen.
You know, what she's done has meant a lot to so many different people. Throughout the reading of, as I'm sure you did, Joe, like the thousands of pages of nasty, nasty letters and filings and motions and mind-numbing stuff that, again, has nothing to do with pop music and everything to do with pop music. There was this part of me that's like a child of divorce. It's like, what if I came in and was like, hey, why don't you just go and I'll explain it to everyone. I'll be like, you know, we just decided this is too expensive. No one, you know, we're just going to everyone's walking away. It's because I said so.
If only it were so simple.
I know.
So why don't we go out by hearing things from the
good listen old... to it from a song from the Happier Times.
It's
when
you know,
things
one of Kesha's iconic tracks, TikTok.
Right. Party doesn't start till she walks in.
Don't stop, make it pop, DJ.
Thank you for listening. This has been the New York Times Popcast. You can subscribe to the podcast on iTunes, Google Play, and everywhere else you enjoy podcasts. You can read Joe and Taffy's stories at nytimes.com/music. You can listen to every podcast ever at nytimes.com/popcast. Our producers are Pedro Rosado and Jocelyn Gonzalez, and I've been your host, Karen Gantz. Thanks for listening.
Unless they look like Mick Jagger. I'm talking about everybody getting